there we are. That's very nice. Yeah. Sore a little bit, right.
Considerably bigger if the bank hadn't had to put around £900 million aside to cover bad debts.
To make this profit, Lloyds Bank has taken an axe to its costs. Over 8,500 jobs have gone, and another 3,000 could go this year as automation increases. Because of the recession, Lloyds has had to make record provisions for bad debts among its customers, including £200 million for private individuals.
I think that what we've had was overconfident lenders meeting overconfident borrowers. And undoubtedly, the banks reduced their standards in that highly competitive environment. And both the borrowers and the lenders are now regretting it.
The banks have been coming under increasing pressure for high charges and for not dropping interest rates fast enough. Against that background, today's high profit from Lloyds is adding to criticism.
I think the banks are behaving, as we said a month ago, as breathless arrogance. They are treating the customer as a sort of milk cow. The fact of the matter is that they are able to make profits at a time like this. Where are they getting those profits from? Their service is not getting better, and they are charging more for all the services they're providing.
With perhaps unfortunate timing, Barclays announced today it was aiming to charge retailers up to 15% more to process credit cards. That's either going to cut retailers' profits or add to what card users pay. But the banks generally are determined to improve the profit margin. Roy's Bank has managed to increase its profits despite the recession and despite the huge provisions for bad debt. Next week, the other big hashtag banks will give their figures, but they're likely to show falling profits or even losses.
The Labour leader, Neil Kinnock, has claimed the government is planning to borrow more money to finance tax cuts before the election, and he said it amounts to embezzlement. But the Prime Minister said Labour was not in a position to criticise when their economic policies remained a mystery.
However, Mr Kinnock, targeting the West Midlands, an area with several marginal seats, spoke of the talking catalogue of incompetence, and in a speech to Labour candidates, underlined the choice that he thinks voters will face after next month's budget.
As an institution, sir, they'll have to depend on raffles, troubled sales and fund runs to buy essential goods. That country simply cannot afford.
What is today, Friday?
The Prime Minister's tour of the East Midlands included a visit to a Leicester family involved in a police race relations initiative. He said Mr Kinnock had no right to attack him before Labour had decided on their policy.
I think after all the years he spent in opposition, he really should have worked his policies out by now, and he really should tell people what they are. Ours are known, our tax policies and our spending policies. His are a mystery piled upon an enemy. It's time he made them clear.
Mr Ashdown, who is the conference in Cornwall, the Liberal Democrats hope to win more seats, is closer to Labour on immediate budget priorities. He opposes the increase in borrowing to finance tax cuts, but unlike either of the other parties, he wants a central bank independent government.
It simply isn't good enough that a politician remains in Britain uniquely of all the Western economies with the power to falsely inflate the economy, as I suspect the budget will be, ahead of an election to win votes.
The budget is at the centre of the pre-election campaign. Mr Kinnock tried to win the argument with tax cuts before any announcement has been made. The Conservative MPs hope that even if they fall behind the polls run up to the budget, the tangible prospect of tax cuts will help them to victory afterwards.
In Belfast, a second man has been charged with the murder of five Catholics in a betting shop earlier this month. Mark Rice from Dundonald in County Down was remanded in custody. Meanwhile, several hundred Protestants and Catholics have attended a peace rally near the scene of the shootings. They called on the gunmen on both sides to stop the violence. Demonstrators planned another vigil outside a pub where Protestants were killed.
Fierce fighting has continued between Armenian and Azeri forces in the disputed territory of Nagorno-Karabakh, despite calls for a ceasefire. The authorities in the enclave have urged the United Nations to declare Nagorno-Karabakh a disaster and to send in peacekeeping forces. Russian radio has described the situation in the capital as nightmarish.
Despite more talk of peace, the reality this week has been that Nagorno-Karabakh's civil war is still raging, and more ferociously than ever.
Are you getting through your strawberries?
Yeah, I'm biting them.
My teeth are a bit...
I've
been a bit edgy all this week.
Refugees are desperate to get out of Nagorno-Karabakh. Here they besiege a helicopter, which has brought supplies to troops from the former Soviet army who are still serving in the territory. For the last 4 years, Azeris and Armenians have been feuding over Nagorno-Karabakh at the cost of more than 1,000 lives. Now the Armenian majority there are calling on the United Nations Security Council to debate the crisis and to declare the territory a disaster zone. They want the UN to send its soldiers, the so-called Blue Helmets, as peacekeeping troops. It's an idea Azerbaijan has already rejected, and at a news conference today, the Azeri Foreign Minister, Hussein Sadikov, suggested instead that mediation from neighbouring Turkey and Iran would be more welcome. Others believe that ultimately the new Commonwealth of Independent States has to end the killing and the carnage. One of Boris Yeltsin's advisers has said that Nagorno-Karabakh is a litmus test for the Commonwealth, that if it cannot solve the crisis there, it will show itself to be a failure and it will fall apart. Ben Brown, BBC News, Moscow.
In China, more than 1 million peasants are leaving their farms and migrating to specially created economic development areas in the south. These areas border Hong Kong and are trying to copy the success of the capitalist British colony. But many of those who make long journeys to Guangdong province have no hope of a job and are being turned away.
This is Guangdong province, the richest in China. Last year, its economy grew by 20%. There are massive development schemes everywhere. Now, Guangdong is the mecca for hundreds of thousands of jobless Chinese workers and peasants looking for a better life. Every day, up to 100,000 arrive at the railway station in the provincial capital, Guangzhou. They can travel freely in China, but most won't be able to get jobs here because they lack employment contracts.
Life in our hometown is awful. We heard there is good money to make here, therefore we came.
Conditions are terrible where I come from, but here I've been scolded and beaten by the local people. Loudspeakers mix train timetable details with appeals for the unemployed to go home. Thousands wait patiently for tickets for the long journey back. Security has been tightened to keep an eye on the destitute amid reports of rising crime. Guangzhou is at the sharp end of economic reform and development in China, borrowing ideas from the capitalist West. Today, southern China is booming as never before, a wave of prosperity inspired and led by the adjacent British colony of Hong Kong, which will be handed back to China in 5 years. Apart from pouring into the southern provinces, unemployed Chinese peasants and workers are still trying to cross into this British colony. The numbers are rising. 500 were detained in the past week. Brian Barron, BBC News, Hong Kong.
The United States Navy has paid a ceremonial farewell to the Scottish Loch, which has been the home of its nuclear submarines for the last 31 years. The closure of the naval base at Holyrock in Strathclyde was announced last summer, but the wind-up operation won't be complete until June. It has been the US Navy's biggest base in Britain.
The largest symbol of the American presence on the Clyde has already gone. The Los Alamos, a giant dry dock, carried away on an even larger cargo ship. The Poseidon nuclear submarines that used it left 3 months ago, obsolete and surplus to requirements in the new post-Cold War era. Amid the pomp and colour of the official farewell ceremony in Dunoon, a US Navy admiral paid a typically American thank you to his host of the last 31 years.
A love affair between the United States Navy and the people of this area. And at least in the memories and in the minds of those leaving, that love affair will continue.
But it was a troubled and sometimes controversial relationship. Not everyone was delighted to see the might of America's nuclear deterrent arrive on their doorstep. But, says the U.S., it was worth it.
31 years of effort by all of our great American sailors and their friends here in Dunoon. It's a wonderful war. It was worth all of that.
The departure of 3,000 U.S. personnel and their spending power has left housing estates almost empty, many local taxi drivers facing the dole, and a local economy in need of a £12 million government cash injection to survive. But not all are pessimistic.
The time for the whale sort of Armageddon situation on our doorstep. With that being removed, people are coming back, people with an affinity for the area, coming back to the area, and we are being overwhelmed.
As more Americans prepared to head for home, one sailor made sure a local girl would accompany him. A swift marriage ensuring he could make the draft, along with what's left of the Holy Loch base. It's due to leave Scotland by the end of June.
Last hope of winning a medal at the Winter Olympics in Albertville appears to be over. The leading British four-man bobsleigh team is only 10th at the halfway stage of the competition.
Just as in 1988, but without Eddie Edwards, Britain faces glorious, medalless failure at the Winter. The number one four-man bobsleigh team, led by Royal Tank Regiment Corporal Mark Tout, and under the pressure of British expectation, made a good start to their first.
first run. But further down the track, they lost time, largely because of mistakes measured in hundredths of a second and caused by wayward steering. Their opening run
had been in
fourth place and with a foggy prospect of gold. Tout's visor had missed it up. After the second run, with two more tomorrow, they were tenth.
It's tough now. I mean, you have to accept disappointment and get on with the job. I mean, that takes time to get over. We'll assess what went wrong, look at the driving, we'll see the video after this and see what the driving mistakes were. And we'll try and find the time tomorrow.
Britain's only consolation is that the unified team from the former Soviet Union had an altogether more disastrous and comical run. One crewman slipped and was very nearly left behind. Yet, as the Bob emerged from around the corner, he was seen sitting backwards. As a matter of routine, crewmen spend a bone-shaking 60 seconds staring at the floor. Backwards or forwards, the experience must be largely the same. The difference is that tonight, he's the laughing stock of our review.
Dear.
Told of the police writing out a confession to which he put some kind of signature. They just wanted somebody to go down as a mug in this case.
As to what gets him going through what he calls a nightmare of prison life, just the hope that I would eventually get released.
That's it so far. The next news is the 9 o'clock news, but from Moira Stewart and from me, have a peaceful weekend.
Good evening. A very wet and windy weekend on the cards for northern Britain. The culprits, a couple of areas of low pressure, and they show up quite nicely on our midday Atlantic satellite picture. These two blobs of cloud, that's where those lows are. One not so very far away from northern UK, the other one much further out in the Atlantic. And they're going to be sweeping their weather fronts in across northern Britain, bringing that rain. Not only that, but look how tightly packed these isobars are as well. So they're going to be some very strong winds indeed. Let's start off by looking at the rain area. Initially, I think there could well be some snow over the hills and mountains of Scotland, but that is soon.
I broke the last ones up and had them sort of open up.
Now let's look at those winds, some very strong winds indeed, perhaps even up to severe gale force on this northwestern side of Scotland, but certainly gale force winds through the Irish Sea and across northern England by the end of the night, and some very gusty conditions indeed on the eastern side of the Pennines. Temperatures will be quite interesting tonight. Initially we'll have light winds and clear skies over southern England, so a frost will develop here, but then later on we'll find the wind increasing, more cloud coming along, so the temperature will pick up again. Certainly quite mild the further north you go. Looking ahead to tomorrow then, and we'll find that cloud and rain extending down, probably no further than Cardigan Bay across to Lincolnshire. Very wet indeed at this western side, and a combination of mild air and some snow melt can well lead to some localised flooding, especially in northwestern parts of Scotland. There will be a brief, brighter shower interlude up in northern Scotland, during the second half of the morning, but then more cloud and rain during the afternoon, and it won't be till the evening that brighter, showery weather pushes in across the Hebrides. Over southern England, south Wales as well, another day, another dry day, there will be a bit of brightness around, particularly in the southeastern corner there. Certainly a very mild day, but of course the wind will temper that. Now looking ahead to Sunday, another weather front, another low, more tightly packed isobars, so although it will start off fairly bright and...
When I went for the paper this morning, there was a dog... Two dogs, actually, but one, basically they give Jess, because he or she, they got about a 6-foot-long tree trunk in its mouth. I said to its owner, I said, another one as daft as ours. She said, yes.
Rogers and Teresa Driscoll. Liberal Democrat leader Fanny Ashdown hits the pre-election campaign trail in Cornwall and Devon.
The Devon school, whose gym is a classroom, is a canteen.
And the Golden Girls of a pre-war Olympic era.
Good evening. As the pre-election bandwagon gathers momentum, the Liberal Democrats are targeting the southwest as the region with the largest proportion of seats they can win from the Conservatives. In the West Country, on the first stages of his campaign trail, leader Paddy Ashdown said voters would turn to his party to oust the Tories.
In spite of, though some say because of, his candid confession of a fortnight ago, Paddy Ashdown's Liberal Democrats have risen in the opinion polls at the expense of the two major parties. Today, amid a wealth of photo opportunities, Mr. Ashdown was trying to improve on his 15% share with some unashamed electioneering in what he believes is one of his most supportive regions.
I'm absolutely certain the people in the South West who want to kick out the Tories, and that I think is the move of the country, won't vote Labour because Labour loses its deposits in most of the seats in the South West. The only vote that can remove the Tories from office in the South West is a Liberal Democrat vote, because in all the constituencies in the South West, we're the challengers. If the Tories are to be removed from this area, the Labour vote is a wasted vote. The Liberal Democrat vote is a vote that does it.
Presumably you've identified winnable seats. Can you tell us where they are?
Certainly not, and you wouldn't expect me to. All I can tell you is that of our most winnable seats, the places where we will remove this government by kicking out the Tory MPs, the South West has a higher proportion than any other region in Britain.
Mr. Ashdown spelled out the Liberal Democrats' economic rescue package of public investment and private enterprise.
What Britain needs is a government that is a majority government of our country, stable, capable of investing, especially in education and the infrastructure, the transport infrastructure that the South West needs so badly. But what it also needs is a party committed to free enterprise, to encouraging small businesses in the way that we've done both in Truro and in Yeovil, to making sure that the self-employed and the small businesses prosper.
Later, Mr. Ashdown lined up with Cornwall's Liberal Democrat MP and four prospective parliamentary candidates to address 80 of the county's leading businessmen. The object was to publicise the parliamentary group's green paper, Roots of Recovery, a strategy to revive Cornwall's economy. Among the key recommendations are assisted area status for the county, investment in education and housing, and the matching by central government of European grant aid set aside for Cornwall. But the overriding message was clear.
Cornwall needs an even stronger Liberal Democrat representation at Westminster. You want to know why? Take a look at what Matthew Taylor does in his constituency and imagine what could be done with five Matthew Taylor right across the country. And I can tell you, you've got.
After the hard sell to the business community came a photo call to the
Oh, I thought you were. Oh, wait for a moment. I'll take an extra sub.
If there'd been any babies around, Mr. Ashdown would almost certainly have kissed them.
7,000 people are expected to attend an all-night party in Exeter tonight. Despite objections by the police and local residents, the rave is going ahead at the West Point Exhibition Centre.
The 12-hour event at the purpose-built concert hall has been advertised all over Britain. It's £20 a head for the alcohol-free event, which starts at 8 o'clock tonight. The organisers say they're used to staging big events.
That's no problem. We've got approximately 100 security personnel, St John's Ambulance, we've got car parking stewards, we've got, I mean, every single precaution you can ever think of, crowd control barriers, everything you would ever need at any other time of concert, whether it be Michael Jackson or anything really, Wembley Stadium.
It's the second time the council has granted a licence for a rave here. On New Year's Eve, 5,000 people attended an event which passed off peacefully. This time the police will have a special lookout inside the dance hall, but the force has objected to the extra 2,000 people, and they're also concerned that drugs like ecstasy are often associated with raves.
It's something that past experience has shown there can be problems. It's something we are conscious of and something that we will be looking at.
What measures are you taking tonight?
For example, one condition of admission to the premises is that everybody entering must be searched, and they are searched by security people, and any substances found on them will be taken, will be handed to the police, and disposed of by ourselves.
Last week, Plymouth had its first rave at a nightclub. Although no trouble was reported at the event itself, 20 people on their way to it were arrested in North Devon and substances believed to be drugs were seized. Tonight's organisers have given assurances that people won't get in with drugs.
We are actually taking more stringent procedures to prevent any drugs coming into this particular venue than you would actually require if you actually came through customs. We've got full body searches, we've got and all the people that are actually body searching are fully experienced about people and where they're going to hide their drugs, etc.
The organisers have also given local residents a hotline number if they have any complaints, and they claim that if tonight's event is a success, they intend to stage more in the southwest in the future.
80 jobs are to go with the closure of British Telecom's Directory Inquiry Centre in Bodmin. BT says the decision has been made because of a drop in the number of calls to the service and the introduction of new technology.
Now you have to pay for it.
Employ some staff, while the remainder should go through natural wastage or voluntary redundancy.
Representatives from the southwest joined a delegation from the Small Independent Brewers Association on a visit to 10 Downing Street today. They presented a petition asking the government to introduce a fair taxation system for beer.
The government is the only body which has anything that holds any hope for us. And I think without their action in line with the European directive, then I think the hope for small brewers is very dim. And of course, the potential loss of choice and freedom of choice of the public for beers across their bars is pretty dismal unless the government acts now.
A North Devon church organist has been jailed for 2 years for sexually abusing a choir boy. Exeter Crown Court heard that Michael Hart, who was also head of the music department at Ilfracombe College, first abused the teenager after taking his pupils on a holiday. Mr. Hart of North Street in Braunton admitted the offences.
30 women from all over the southwest gathered for a lunch in an Exeter hotel today, which marked their achievements in the workplace and the community. A cross-section of women from many different backgrounds were nominated to attend, including a chief inspector of police, a newspaper editor, and the warden of a sheltered housing scheme. It was the third Women of the West luncheon to be held.
Members of Cornwall's Social Services Committee have voted to close St Michael's residential home in Penzance. The decision comes only 3 months after a decision to keep it open. Health unions, who claim the consequences will be disastrous, have presented the committee with a protest petition bearing 3,000 names.
Mickey, the macho white rhino from Blackpool, has arrived at Paignton Zoo, ready to try to tempt Gracie. She and the former man in her life, Dale, have been together now for several years, without producing the small thunder of tiny rhino feet. It's hoped the northern lad will win Aunt Gracie's heart, or spur a jealous Dale into action. Contestants are being kept apart for the time being.
Love young dream, eh? A primary school in South Devon is so cramped and overcrowded, its classrooms have to double for offices, a canteen and a gymnasium. But the government has placed a limit on school building in Devon, and many schools like this one will now have to wait years before they're repaired or extended.
This is Kingsway Primary School in South Devon, and this is where the children play. And this is where they eat, but for most of the time it's also where they listen and learn, because this part-time canteen is also their classroom. But this school is basically just two fairly large rooms, and there's no space, so desks have to become dinner tables. Overcrowding is not the only problem. The school's also crying out for repairs, but getting more room is the main priority. Here, for example, the children are helping turn their classroom from a canteen into their gymnasium. These children are being schooled in the 4 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, and rearranging, in this case, furniture. With military precision, the pupils go through the drill of clearing the main classroom area to make way for PE. An important part of the week is laid down in the national curriculum. Everything cluttering up this room has to be removed to clutter up the other. Only once this is done can the gym apparatus be pulled out from the wall and assembled for the PE lesson. Parents, teachers and governors of the school have been lobbying Devon County Council to remedy the crisis. But due to government borrowing restrictions, the council has relegated the primary school to its third division of priorities. Now, important building work will have to be delayed.
If the delay continues, it means basically we will get more and more children coming into the school with nowhere, really, no facilities for children. We have to, in fact, increase numbers up to 84, because our PAL number, planned admission level, number in fact is 12, and with 7-year groups, the 7 months, 82 can't turn your way to
the area
office,
and
probably the levelling off point will be at about
100. This room is not only a classroom or a canteen, but also the staff room, the teacher's changing room, and adjoins what the head teacher laughingly describes as his office.
Of course, we've got no office facility for
a big stick on the bottom. of panic. Would you come up? Wouldn't move, you know.
Way in, yeah.
Do
you think troubled waters would be? Do you think troubled waters would be a acceptable answer? Yeah.
In the wind.
He's all right, he can come with it, Ryan, but let's have a look. We're looking for
out in the wind. It's there, but it's a more popular one, Karen. What do you think? Got any answer from you? Nothing? Nothing coming into your head? Well, I think we're going to lose that light. Yeah, we lose the light, so that means, Karen, you have, you have control of the book. What are you going to do? Play. Okay, rejoin your family and remember, no conferring. All right then, Lynn, what do you think? Something a man with a wig should never do.
Swim.
All right? Swim!
Jewelry voucher to the value of
£150. Hello.
Okay. Let's have a look for windsurf. It isn't there, so we lose a life. Maybe that includes going into the wind. I don't know. Brian.
Bend down.
Bend down. It isn't there. Two lives have gone already. The cooks might get a chance to steal. So, Brian, what do you think?
Ride a motorbike.
They have a helmet anyway, so.
What? Deal again, Phil. Have it cut.
Go out in the rain.
Go out in the rain. Yeah.
Take your top off.
Take your top off.
A bit blow dried.
Jeff, there's a few answers there. What do you think?
I think be extremely careful or you take your jumper off to your clothes.
All right, okay. Take your jumper off carefully. That's what he should never do. We're looking for something he should never do. So, all right, he shouldn't take his jumper off quickly then.
In public.
Okay, or in public. Shouldn't take his jumper off. If it's there, then you have the money in the bank. If not, it goes to the orchards. Take your jumper off, not. It isn't there. No. Round two, the orchards have £68 and the cooks have £70. And there are quite a few reveals. What have we got? Four answers to reveal. Answer number six is... Go near a helicopter. Oh. Five, answer number five is... Scratch your head. Answer number four is... Sneeze. Answer number three is... We've got electricity in there, we're going to look for gas. It isn't there, so 2 miles have gone. The orchards might get a chance to steal, Louisa.
A cooker.
A cooker. You might miss the cooker. Let's look for the cooker. It isn't there, so the orchards may be a chance to steal the money. Brian.
Fridge.
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 Fridge. Brian. Seems to be the popular answer. Have you an answer yourself, Brian?
Just fridge.
Just fridge. You're all going to go with the fridge, all right? Let's have a look. If fridge is one of those two missing answers, you have the money in the bank. If not, it goes automatically to the cooks. We're looking for the fridge. It isn't there, so the cooks bring the money. Listen, if the wheel hadn't been invented, none of those would have been either. Answer number six is... a light bulb. You'd miss a light bulb. All right, so that means that the Orchard family have £68. The Cook family have £156. We're going to take a break. Join us in a couple of minutes when one of our families has a chance to play for £3,000 in big money. We'll see you then.
Resourceful in boys. I notice that in the classroom, yeah, for a marriage, they have to.